welcome to the Outwear Mobile podcast. Today is another special event. We've got our first and so far only guest coming back to the show, Hugh Bradlow, who is the Chief Technology Officer of Telstra. Welcome.
Thanks very much, Danny.
And we've got Pete Talbot, who's our lead designer.
I was waiting for my intro, Danny.
Would you like the intro?
What am I, chop liver?
Yeah,
you chop liver. I'm no doctor, but thanks for acknowledging me.
And Lucia Vong, who is our marketing manager.
Thanks, Danny.
So, I want to kick off the show. Hugh, we got an email from you today, and your title, even though I introduced you as the CTO, your title seems to have changed to Chief Scientist.
Yep.
What does a Chief Scientist do at Telstra?
Well, I'm going to find out with time. But basically, my role is no longer focused. I don't have any executive management responsibility, so that frees me up to focus purely on long-term technology directions and disruption, and to both act as an advisor to the board and the business, but also to be a loose cannon to go around looking at the things that are going to change the way we do business in the future.
Do they give you a corporate credit card? And does it work? Have you got that in your PayPal account? Because I imagine that's where you'll be doing a lot of shopping.
I still have the corporate credit card, but I suspect that I'll be doing a lot of shopping overseas as well as in order to find out.
So more travel then?
Probably a bit more, yeah. Because really, you're going to have to be out there exploring what startups are doing and what's happening in Silicon Valley or Tel Aviv, or just to try and see where things are coming from, what's going to change the world.
Okay. Very interesting. And kicking off from what date?
4th of August.
4th of August, okay.
But I'm going on holiday next week, so...
So when you return, you'll be the Chief Scientist.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's very exciting. Good luck.
Thank you.
Hope that goes well. I wanted to take you back to the last podcast a few weeks ago, where we were talking about WWDC and Google I.O. Those events have now passed. We did some prognosticating on those events, and I wanted to get your feedback on what you thought came out, what you think is importance, and what are some of the things that Telstra are relevant for Telstra?
Yeah, look, a lot of it's relevant for us in the sense that Google obviously are a major technology supplier, as are Apple. So we sell their stuff, obviously. And so how it works and what value we can add in terms of particularly that sales process and the assurance process is important to us. I think one of the things that Google are doing that's very interesting is the same operating system on multiple devices, your phone, your car, your tablet, your watch, your TV. And interesting, to me, one of the most interesting announcements out of Google I.O. was Chrome running Android apps, or Chromebooks running Android apps. So you're starting to see that consistency across all their products. And I must admit, I've become a big Chromebook fan because that ability to just go and get another device out of the cupboard and put it on the cloud and get everything reconstructed immediately is very powerful. If only they could do it with Android properly, that would be even better.
I've often thought about getting a couple of Chromebooks in the office, because we're actually a business. We run on Google Apps, so everything we do is in Google Drive and Google Apps. And I'm just not sure who would accept a Chromebook over a MacBook Pro.
Well, I'm getting almost to the stage. My son, who's a student, wanted a laptop for his university, and he said to me, a Chromebook's great because I use Google Apps, and he's already broken it, so we can just go and get another one. And
are you, because they came out, Google came out last year, I think, at the last Google I/O with the Pixel Chromebook. That's kind of an Uber high resolution screen, pretty expensive.
Yeah, $1,200.
Not worth it.
That's not worth it. But for $300, it's a different proposition.
Yeah. And do they work offline reasonably well?
Yeah, they offline part works pretty well.
Okay. I think we should probably get one in here. I'm not sure who we're going to give it to.
We need it for testing, don't we, Danny? Once our apps start to run on them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. But that's a really interesting concept of having apps running on desktop machines. And it's obviously something that Apple, I assume, could do. You know, the libraries are all the same with Objective-C, and the operating, iOS is based on OS 10. So I wonder if that's something that we are going to see out of Apple in the future, and how useful that would be.
Well, we've already seen the first of it, which is the ability to do things across multiple devices. So to get your incoming phone calls and pick them up on your Mac, or to respond to an SMS from your Mac. So that multi-device aspect is something they're also pushed at WWDC. Mm. So I think both of them will go down that track, the full ecosystem for their devices.
I'm actually living in a beta world at the moment. I don't know if any of you guys have got iOS 8 installed, but I've got it installed. I waited till beta 3, and I've got Yosemite installed.
How's that?
10.10 is very stable. iOS 8 is reasonably stable, but the continuity stuff that you talked about, the ability for, you know, you can answer phone calls on the Mac and stuff, I've done it once and it was kind of weird. Yeah. And then often in the last couple of days, I've come back into my office and my computer is just ringing, you know, like that, the iPhone ring.
Yeah, that's what I had imagined it to be. When I saw that stuff, I was like, that just sounds too complicated to be useful.
Is it? Well, no, I think it's a bug. Like, I think when you pick up somewhere, it's meant to stop ringing, but this, it just kept ringing.
It's actually really useful. If you're sitting at your desk with a screen in front of you, you don't want to be fiddling around with your phone the whole time, and the ability to actually just respond from your screen.
For text messages or?
Both text and calls.
Well, don't you use iMessage on your Mac?
I turned it off.
Really?
I had trouble with it, yeah.
Oh, and I'm a big fan of iMessage.
Missing text, so I just binned it.
Right.
Yeah. I do it with Viber today.
Have they got a PC?
They've got a desktop app.
They do.
A Mac and PC.
Okay. Yeah. Do WhatsApp have a desktop client?
No, not aware of. And I don't think they do voice yet. I'm a little confused by that. They were talking about it.
But Viber's amazing. I had a friend over in the US and I was talking to him just a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you've got a 4G connection here and they've got a good connection there, it's crystal clear.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. The only thing is, since they've been acquired, they keep on sending me stickers and emoticons and things like that, which just don't appeal to me at all.
Just on that quickly, I heard Line. Have you heard about Line?
Yeah.
The Line is sort of the equivalent of WhatsApp and they're just listing at the moment. I think they're going for like over $10 billion valuation. It's just incredible.
They've also got a huge number of users because it's basically Chinese, I think.
Mm. Japanese, I think.
Japanese, yeah. Then there's WeChat, which is the Chinese one.
Yeah. Just back on Google I/O and this car stuff, I thought it was really interesting. There was an announcement today that I think his name's Alan Mulaney. I think he's the CEO of Ford. He's actually just joining the Google as a Google board, joining the Google board. And then Eddie Q from Apple is on the Ferrari board. And so I think this stuff about CarPlay and Android in the car is really the next wave that we're going to see in the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I think the car and the watch, actually, Jason Norman from the CTO team came back with the new LG watch. Mm. And I must admit, he was showing it to me in the bus the other day, and I'm completely sold except for one thing, which is that I need a passive screen. So, because I need to be able to glance at the time.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's really cool.
Yeah. I can see you're wearing a Pebble. And I would have thought
I love it.
I would have thought as an Android user, the LG, we've got a couple of LG watches out there as well. They are a bit heavier than the Pebble, and
I think doesn't bother
battery
me.
Life's probably not as good. But the active screen, I wonder how easy that is to look at.
It's not too bad because you can tap it.
Right.
But I love the fact with the Pebble, I designed this watch face myself in 5 minutes. And it's specially designed for long-sighted people who wear glasses and don't want to put them on all the time.
Yeah, was that the watch face generator?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
a German site. Yeah. It's really good.
The German side. Let's move on to another topic. I think it was last week I saw that David Thodey was over in Adelaide talking about the upgrade to the Adelaide Stadium in terms of technology.
Right.
And I guess it's quite relevant when we produce the AFL app and the NRL app and racing at work. So we have an interest in making sure that these products work in the stadiums. And often that's been a frustration of mine when I've gone to the footy and you try to call someone or check the scores on another game and you just can't get online.
Right.
So what is it – what is Telstra looking to achieve with?
Well, look, I think there are a couple of things. The first is obviously capacity is one. Now, the only way you can deliver that amount of capacity into a stadium is to just have more and more base stations. The second thing, of course, is that not all devices are cellular devices. A hell of a lot more devices nowadays. People have got tablets with them, which are non-cellular devices. So you need Wi-Fi as a complementary service. So you've got to put in both cellular and Wi-Fi to get the full coverage. But the other sorts of things that we've been looking at are things like LTE broadcast, which allows you to use effectively a multicast system within specific cells. We haven't decided on whether we'll launch that or not, but it's those sorts of things where if you want an action replay, you know, and everyone wants to look at the goal again, that's great because you can broadcast it. The other thing you can do is you can broadcast multiple camera angles. And so people can start looking at that replay from the ref's angle, the top of the stadium, the worm's eye view, all those types of things. So we see that the stadium solutions are going to become much richer in terms of their ability to support those people who want to do it all the time, which we all do.
You're right. And so what is the actual technology that's going into the Adelaide Oval?
I'm not across the details, but I think it's a combination of cellular and Wi-Fi.
Right. Yeah. And is that part of the same program? Because I know there's another Telstra announcement about getting the whole of Australia on Wi-Fi so that I guess that idea was if I'm walking past a house that has a Telstra broadband connection, as a Telstra customer, I can jump on their Wi-Fi and which takes a bit of pressure off the cellular network.
Yep.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, so it's the FON solution. I don't know if you're familiar with FON. It's exactly as you describe. If you're a BT have been running this for quite some time. If you're a BT customer, you effectively opt into a solution which allows you to share your Wi-Fi access point with other BT customers who can use their existing login credentials to get access to the internet through your Wi-Fi. Now, people say, isn't that insecure? No, because the security is built in. And you also can effectively hard partition it so that you don't lose capacity in the process. You use quality of service effectively to separate the two services. So that's a way of taking all your customers and enabling them to get the Wi-Fi access wherever they are, or wherever they're Telstra customers, and also to expand the number of Wi-Fi hotspots dramatically. But that then is complemented by public Wi-Fi solutions and by stadium Wi-Fi solutions and by enterprise Wi-Fi solutions. So your Wi-Fi here could be managed in the same environment from Telstra using the same SSID, and you can roam around and get access to your corporate environment wherever you are.
Right.
So is that essentially just like a large-scale guest network, like how you can set a guest network on a router?
Yeah, it's a second SSID or third or fourth. And you're right. It's like a distributed guest network.
Cool.
But it uses your existing login credentials.
Yeah.
Just an aside.
And one last thing. It roams overseas as well because through FON, who have about 9 million hotspots internationally, you can roam internationally using your existing credentials. Sorry, Danny.
Do you think that's going to change? Like at a stadium, everyone bringing more devices? Would it, like we talk about second screen in a few of our podcasts, but this is like not second screen. This is screen in a live environment.
Well, I just think the Internet of Things, like all devices will want to get on the network. So the watches will want to get on the network. They'll want their own Wi-Fi connection. Google Glass wants its own Wi-Fi connection. Your phone wants it. Your tablet wants it.
Yep. I think you're going to see multiple screens. At least three, no, if not four or five, per person at a thing like a football game.
We're talking smart pies.
Yeah.
Someone was telling me about I was talking to a guy at an advertising agency yesterday. He was talking about pie warmers that have beacons in them. So you're walking past like a 7-Eleven and you've got, you know, the 4 and 20 app and it kind of pops up on your phone. Wouldn't you like a hot, fresh hot meat pie?
Well, scary. That's why I'm glad I'm not in advertising anymore.
The other thing, of course, is you can get, you know, a view on how long the queue to get pies is. And over time with big data, you'll be able to get predictive things like you're really hungry, go now because it's going to be a long queue in 3 minutes' time.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? The one thing I was in Thailand for a couple of weeks on holidays, and the thing that strikes me about Australia is that there's so little free Wi-Fi around. You know, you go to all these Asian countries, European countries, the US, and you walk into a Starbucks or you walk into a massage place for a massage or a cafe, and there's always free Wi-Fi.
And it's good quality.
And I go to, you know, the hottest cafes in Richmond. There's no Wi-Fi. I go to my gym. There's no Wi-Fi.
Danny, it's because Telstra's 4G network is second to none. There's no need for it.
So Peter has a valid point, though, because I can't – in Asia, it's a bit different for developing versus developed. But in the developed markets of Europe and America, the governments have sucked all the money out of the industry and license fees. And they haven't then had – the carriers haven't had the investment to put in a decent 4G network, so or a decent 3G network.
The networks in the US surely are.
They're okay, but they're not nearly as good as our network. And so, you know, people put much more emphasis on Wi-Fi because often you've got poor coverage or you've got poor throughput or poor response.
So that's – It's just because we've got a good network that we don't need. We just don't need it.
It's not that you don't need it because, as I said, there are devices that are non-cellular. And it turns out that the actual a number of devices that have a cellular modem in is inversely proportional to the screen size. So below 5 inches, 100% pretty much have got a cellular modem in. 7 to 8 inches, 20%. Or 7 to 10 inches, 20%. And then you get 11 and above, virtually nothing has got a cellular modem in. So your laptops and things like that. So you do need the range of coverage. And that's another reason why we're seeing more and more Wi-Fi.
Some of the – back to the continuity stuff, some of the things they're going to be doing is you'll be able to – I think it'll just automatic – the Mac will automatically be able to use your hotspot from your iPhone when you turn it on if you set it that way.
Yeah.
But that goes to a point which I want to raise with you later is the high cost of data in Australia. So we can talk about – let's talk about that now. I spent $30 on a – like an unlimited data plan in Thailand.
Right.
Now, it wasn't 4G standard. It wasn't 3G. No, this, I'm not talking about Telstra specifically, but it feels to me like data is reasonably expensive. And if I look to buy, you know, my plan, I'm with Telstra, I've got a $70 plan, I get 2 gig of data. And if I want to buy more, it feels like it's sort of a lot more expensive. Is that going to come down over time?
Well, look, there's always going to be competitive pressure and the technology is going to improve. To bring the cost down. But the truth is you're probably getting unlimited data plans because in reality there's not that much data you can push through the network. So the network self-limits you.
Right.
Whereas if you've got a big network, a high-capacity network, you can push an awful lot of data through the network. And that just becomes unaffordable. So, you know, I would argue that we focused on quality, not quantity. And that in reality, you're getting a better service here. But, you know, that's always going to be a debate.
It's a great service. But one of the things that that frustrates me, and I've got a big internet plan at home. I'm with Big Pond Cable at home, and I've upgraded from, you know, I had 100 gig and then I needed more. So I've just gone to the biggest plan, which is half, you know, 500 gig a month. And I sort of don't think about the usage. But on my phone, I think about the usage all the time. I'm always kind of checking it. I use the Telstra 24/7 app, always worrying, have I gone over my data? And it just drives me crazy. I sort of would rather just give you a bit more money and just not have to worry about it.
So how big a plan have you got?
So I've got 2 gig of data.
Okay. So 2 gig, I must admit, is relatively easy to blow through.
Yeah.
But then, you know, this is where you can start looking at some of those apps. Facebook consumes an enormous amount of data. So my son was blowing through his cap all the time. So I switched Facebook onto Wi-Fi only.
Right.
The thing that frustrates me with Android is there's a huge amount of data going, which is just OS services. And I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, data's getting more and more important, so I hope that the competitive pressures increase. And
what was the culprit, Bandy, that you had? Tumblr, was it? Yeah. What, do you know how much data it was sucking? It was something like a gig, and it was just boiled, just boiled it down to animated GIFs.
A gig of data. Oh, wow.
Because it just destroyed his cap straight away. Yeah,
and I think that, I mean, I think price of data is really interesting because we're seeing everything move to the cloud. So we have all these syncing apps like Dropbox and Drive. And I had only recently got a home Wi-Fi connection and I've lived at my place for 3 years because I've been living off the internet on my phone. And the reason we switched was because I didn't realize that I reformatted my computer and my Dropbox resynced using my phone data, and I got a very, very big bill. And things like that you just don't think about because it's like I have 3 gig of data on my phone and I never use it all. So I think as we move towards the cloud, I think data is going to be more and more interesting and how we bundle that. And
it is interesting. Like I'm trying to get my mum up to speed with technology. Like she's just avoided it her whole life and now she has a MacBook and an iPhone and she loves it. She used Snapsense all the other day. She used the AFL app the other day. And so she finally understands what I do at work, which is kind of cool. But I was, she had like a dongle stick thing with a provider and it wasn't really working out because she didn't have good coverage where she was. But so I was looking at changing internet providers and it also was just really clunky to put the stick in. She had to sort of click a few steps and it was just a bit, she just didn't, couldn't be bothered. So then I was like, okay, we'll get her, you know, like big boy internet. So like cable or ADSL2 or, and then just looking into the plans, it was so expensive to do that. I ended up looking at her cellular plan cause she was, with a provider that had, she had a fair chunk of data and the best option for her was just to tether her phone data to her Mac. And that's what you were saying before, the iOS 8 thing, how that happens automatically. That was the first thing for me that sprang to mind, that she can come home, put her phone down and her computer will just be
online.
I think for me, that's a really big shift in the industry because it takes all those steps out that were quite difficult. And it just makes it seamless.
You didn't look at the MiFi solution, the little Wi-Fi hotspots? Because dongles, that's a declining market because of the complexity you mentioned.
She was really going for like the budget option. So free was like, was good.
Free was number one.
But
on, you know, just finishing off the conversation, you know, coming back to Australia and turning on my 4G, every time I got onto a Wi-Fi network in Thailand, I was like doing a speed test.
Yeah.
And then you come back and you do a speed test on 4G and it just like, it's unbelievable. Like I download like 70 megabits on 4G.
So yeah.
It's insanely fast.
And you can push an awful lot of data through that.
So I guess you just pay for quality. Is
exactly.
that right?
Okay. Exactly.
All right. So I wanted to move on to probably the main topic today. And we've put in the show notes, but there's been a lot of talk around Samsung recently, and Samsung came out last week and their results were sort of declining. It's a bit hard. Samsung don't break out their results clearly, but it seems to me that there's this the Android market, and I want to focus on Android, is sort of getting to a point where the PC market got to where the promise was always that vendors could differentiate by building on top of Android and putting software on top of Android. But now it seems like that sort of is not playing out. So everyone just wants the plain Google services. That's the more expensive. That's the kind of the premium option, just to have no crapware around your services. And it's a race to the bottom in terms of hardware costs. So the people that are winning are the sort of the Chinese manufacturers and the Indian manufacturers who are making this hardware cheaper, and Samsung are being displaced.
Right.
What's your view on that?
I personally think that there's differentiation in the hardware. So the camera, the sound, the waterproofing. So I've just recently got a Sony Xperia Z2. It's waterproof. That's a big deal.
Mm. The Samsung S5 is also waterproof.
I think the Samsung S5 is. What I think, though, is that what everyone's learned is that with the stock Android is you get the updates quicker. And, you know, when you were doing Android 2.3, you needed a launcher on top of it. Now there are so many third-party launchers. The Google Stock launcher is pretty cool. There isn't that value add in the software. Plus, a lot of these companies are really good at hardware, but not so great at software.
Mm.
And so I think that, you know, they'll have to focus on being able to pack the differentiation into the hardware, because there's still, in my mind, a lot of difference between Android phones. I agonize long and hard before I switch phones because I'm looking for a combination of all those features.
But with, you know, if you think about the regular, you know, I think there's a difference between people who are going out and buying the S5 and people who are the mass population who, my understanding is Android is really has a lot of share in the middle to low end.
Yep.
You know, at the top end, I think all the numbers I see, it's kind of, you know, it's really iPhone versus, you know, iPhone does very well in the premium markets.
Right.
And Android does very well in the lower markets. And this article was really saying that, you know, Samsung have done well because they've been competing. The S5 has been competing against the iPhone and doing very well. But now they're, you know, and they were the first to the market with big screens and OLED displays or AMOLED displays and all of those premium features. But now we're at a point where all the hardware, you know, there's a bit of differentiation in the hardware. So the camera on your Sony might be a bit better than the camera on the S5, but ultimately it's all going down to commodity, and it's who can produce the phone for the cheapest.
Yep, I think that's true.
And I guess what's the end game for a Samsung? And this really goes back to how important is software?
Well, software is very important, but it really comes down to, is it a core competency for you? So Samsung going down the Tizen route, I think for exactly the reasons that you've outlined.
Yeah.
But it's a big ask to create a whole new ecosystem, very big ask. Even if it, you know, even if it runs Android apps, you've still got to get developers to make changes for you. They've still got to adapt them to Google Maps and things like that. So I think it's going to be a hard road for them to hoe, because I think Google and Apple have really created the whole ecosystem end to end. Now, you point out the big screens. The fact is that Samsung have done extremely well against Apple, because for a long time, well, still today, Apple don't have a big screen device. So there are those types of innovations that change the market.
Mm. It's nice to have, you know, competition in the market as well, because, you know, without Samsung, there would never be. Like, because Apple was so just
dominant
and but just with, no, this is the screen size. And Steve Jobs, I remember saying, you know, he always said, like, it can't be above 3.5 inches or whatever, and nobody wants a big phone. But the market has spoken and said that that's what they want. And I think we'll see the, you know, the iPhone 6 in a couple of months.
A little bit bigger.
And it's going to be bigger?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I think that it actually means that there's a really big opportunity or a big ask of brands to, or companies like Samsung and Sony and Motorola to provide other services. So it's how they service their customers more than anything. And you see this with the stores that are popping up, like the Samsung shop to compete with the Apple shop. Because when it comes down to the average user, in the end, the screen size, the camera, I don't think people can tell the difference to a certain extent. Like, once it gets so good that you can't tell the difference, then it comes down to, well, what else do I get for my phone? And maybe it's that extra little service that you get, that when you go into a shop, they just switch your phone if it's broken, or like on the spot, you don't have to wait weeks for them to repair your screen or whatever it is. I think the big companies have to put in place a really strong marketing strategy around service. I'm a marketer, so I believe that we live in a service economy and people just want things to work. And when they don't, the quicker you can fix it, the better it is for them.
But none of these other Android phones have services. So are you using any Sony services on your Sony phone?
Which service?
Any Sony cloud services? You're probably using Dropbox and you're probably using Google.
It's true. I use Dropbox. Yeah. I use Double Twist for my music player. So I do use, actually, I use the Sony Walkman app, because it's got a nice feature where you can put shortcuts to playlists on your desktop, and that's handy in the car. But not a lot, I agree.
Yeah. So that's the thing, you know, you've got what I imagine Samsung and Sony and HTC spending quite a lot of money developing all this software on top of Google. I'm sure they spend a lot of money, because it's very, I mean, we know from how hard it is to develop sort of single-purpose apps. To develop wrappers around operating systems must be intensely complicated. And you just wonder if there's any value in it. Does anyone go and go, you know what, I really need the TouchWiz 2 interface from Samsung? Or are they buying the phones because they just got the big screens and
I think a lot of it is at that, you know, that point of sale when you're in a Telstra store, for example, and you've got five Android devices staring back at you, and they're just, you know, slabs. They're just, you know, monoliths. Any sort of point of difference on that initial launch screen, for example, is going to give you a competitive edge. Or maybe it did in the past. Maybe consumers are a bit more savvy.
So that's true for a first-time buyer. But a second-time buyer is probably going to be much more interested in the service aspects that Lucia's talking about, because, you know, I come in and I go from an S4 to an S5. I would like to be able to port you know, my experience, just like I can do with an iPhone. I can go and attach it to iTunes and bang, everything's across all my settings, my apps, my folders, the whole lot. If they replicated that experience, then it would be a different service proposition. But to my, I haven't tried Samsung, but I haven't seen a manufacturer do that service experience properly on Android.
Mm. What I read a lot in the press about, is it Xiaomi?
Xiaomi, yeah. I don't know how you pronounce
what
it.
What can you, I mean, Xiaomi is a Chinese hardware, phone brand.
Yep.
And apparently the guys, there are a couple of founders, and they're like the rock stars in China, and they are doing really, really well in the market. Premium products. They only sell, I think, via their website. Is there any? Are we going to have Xiaomi in Australia?
I'm sure it will come. If not through the carriers, through eBay at some point.
Right.
But the fact is that they're a classic example of what you're talking about. You just, you know, you create high end hardware at budget prices, and then you put signage and mod. I think is what they run on it, and you've got a very capable platform at budget price.
And I guess if we're talking about Xiaomi, we talk about the Amazon Fire Phone that also came out. Can you see that coming to the Australian market?
Well,
and would that come via a carrier? I mean, they've got to deal with AT&T in the US.
Yeah, that one's a bit more difficult because really, unless you're an Amazon fanboy, which I happen to be, you're not probably going to be as attracted to that phone. And they don't offer Amazon as a retail service in Australia, except via US or UK stores. So that one's a bit harder to envisage.
Well, because the Fire tablet is available in Australia. The Kindle tablet. The Fire tablet.
Right.
So I think it'll be interesting to see whether...
Yeah. You know, but I think you buy... I don't know how you buy it. I don't think the carriers supply that, do they?
We might come back to you on that. I mean, I know we're talking about it with... some of the products we're developing, we're talking about porting because, like you say, if you want to develop on the Amazon Android platform,
right,
you need to replumb away from the Google Play services into the Amazon services. So in-app purchasing, mapping, push notifications, all goes via the Amazon services.
Right.
So there's quite a bit of work to
do. That sounds like a huge undertaking to, you know, port an app to Amazon.
Certainly for me.
It is. Yeah, okay. are we likely to do that with any of our apps in the near future?
There's been, you know, interest.
Yeah, we're certainly talking about it. I mean, we're an AWS partner and, you know, I think there's some of the higher profile apps that we develop. There's sort of a natural desire for Amazon to get those apps on their platform because I think you need the big apps on your platform to make your platform viable.
Yeah.
So I guess while we're talking about this, Windows Phone is... is obviously there was a big manifesto that came out. I don't know if you read that from the new Microsoft CEO, big manifesto about changing the business. And there's rumors that there's going to be huge job losses at Microsoft. You know, I've heard up to 30,000 people, huge. How's Windows Phone going? With that context, how's Windows Phone going in the market?
I suppose, you know, the Nokia is a very good phone and people like the camera. They really like the camera.
Yeah.
So for someone who puts a lot of emphasis on being able to do camera work, it's an attractive phone. People like the operating system. It's really a question of the developer ecosystem and that's the challenge that any entrant has. Samsung will have the same challenge with Tizen. And you've just mentioned it with Kindle Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about that today, actually, like developing apps for Microsoft. And it comes back to the discussion we had with material design as well. And it's just fine designing for Windows Phone. It's just not flexible enough. As a developer or as a designer that works with developers, you just don't have enough at your disposal. And it's... The problem is it's too different. So if you look at Material and L now and iOS 7 and 8, they're pretty similar. They're not worlds apart. But if you look at, you know, like a Windows Phone Metro designed app, it's just, it's too different. And it's not flexible enough at all. So I think that's why, you know, developers just aren't attracted to it.
Yeah. And also a lot of the design for iOS 7 and 8 and material design comes from looking at how users actually use the devices.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so people are getting used to certain behaviors and creating conventions already. And then to have something completely different is very difficult.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, it came out quite a few years ago now and it was extremely ambitious then. But I've only used it back then for a couple of weeks. I haven't used it recently. But from what I can see, like if we looked at the Skype app and a couple of the flagship apps, it's just not there. And unless they do some sort of drastic change and something that is as good as Material Design in terms of, you know, what it gives developers, then it's going to die.
Mm.
But I always recommend Windows Phone for people who don't care about apps.
So, why is that?
Well, because
no apps on it.
People love it. It is a great experience. Like they're really nice phones. They're a good price point. They look great. I've got a.
Who did you used to work for?
A little company called Nokia.
Okay.
But I was pre
Microsoft. Yeah. I recommend the Symbian phone.
Yeah. No, I'd never do that. That's okay. Awful.
But it's such a huge investment as well. Like I think the difficulty is for companies to make an iOS and Android app already, it's expensive. If you want to make a really good app that you're going to maintain, to add another piece of software on top of that again needs to share the branding and share the experience but be completely different.
Yeah.
It's another testing team.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge investment.
And for what? 10% of the market?
Oh, I don't think it's...
In the US, it's 11. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it varies by market. So, but, yeah. You know, roughly of that order is my guess.
Yeah.
It's just... Sorry, guys.
One last thing I was thinking about, these bigger phones, and one of the things I've noticed with iOS 8 and something that's definitely come out of Android is, first of all, there's going to be user replaceable keyboards. So there's that swipe keyboard, which I think makes a big difference if you're doing one-handed, but also the new messaging thing works. You can send an audio message just by holding a little microphone and just speaking into it and then sending it. And also to take selfies and photos, you can just hold the camera icon and it automatically opens up the camera and takes a photo and then sends that photo. So there's all these things I can see that iOS, that. Apple are building to iOS, which will make one-handed operation easier. You remember the change from going 3.5 to a 4-inch screen? You had to kind of stretch up. And whenever I play with an Android phone, I do that occasionally. iOS, just like the you know, the S5, you just can't use it with one hand. It's a two-handed device.
Funny enough, all those features you mentioned, I've been using on Android for quite some
time. Yeah, I know. I think I remember you showing me the swipe keyboard.
Yeah. I mean, I've been using swipe for, I don't know, about 4 years.
Yeah.
And as I once told them, they're drug dealers because you're hooked. Yeah. Once you've done it, you're hooked.
I used to have swipe on my N8 on Symbian, and it absolutely just made the entire device just so much more usable.
Yeah.
It's quite funny because with this plaster on my finger, I can't swipe at the moment. It's really disabling.
It's probably a good medical thing to sell. You know how you can get the gloves that let you... You've got to get some bandages that let you use that. I want to finish off with a conversation about wearables. Hugh's got a Pebble. I've got a Pebble. Pete's got a Pebble.
I got
Lucia enough. Has no Pebble.
I'm not wearing mine today.
Not wearing us. What's your high level view on wearables? Is it a thing? Where's it going? If we're here in a year talking about it, will we all have one?
Look, I have gone through a sort of roller coaster ride in this. I first of all started thinking, got to have a smartwatch. Then I ordered Pebble as a Kickstarter thing, and by the time I got it, I thought, I don't really have a use for this. But funny enough, when I saw the Android L features, the personal unlock feature, I suddenly realized I needed something on me that's permanently tethered to my phone. And if I'm going to put something on my wrist, it has to first and foremost be a watch. And the Pebble's the only one that really is a watch because of the passive screen and the watch faces you can design, which is really great. So that immediately converted me. Then as soon as I got it, I had half a dozen other use cases. So selective notification, something's just come through for me now. I can tailor the notifications I get, the ability to, when my phone's in my pocket, reject calls. So there's all these use cases developing, and that's not including all the health ones that will follow. So I think, you know, over the next year, we will see everyone who wears a watch getting a smartwatch. Just because the use cases are becoming so valuable or so useful. Things like the glasses, those are will have application for particular people, people who work with, you know, need to use both their hands in their work. Having something like Google Glass is really valuable. Whether those become consumer propositions depends on the use case again. So we tend to take a very use case approach to it and say, is this something that we can see the use cases for, and will consumers find it useful, enterprises find it useful, or not? And I start to see now that these use cases are emerging very rapidly.
Do you think there'll be a point in the next 3 years where watches or wearables, call them watches, accept SIM cards and are, you know, you talk about the screen size, 5 inch and below having cellular modems.
Yep.
Do you see, you know, is there a nano SIM going in my watch?
Well, there are. Years? I think this Galaxy Gear's got a SIM in it, hasn't it?
Not sure if it's got a
camera. It can make phone calls, so maybe.
Maybe that's why
I've got a feeling it has got a SIM.
Okay.
So I'm not as convinced on that use case, but there are things, you know, that you. I think until people start to experience them, you won't know what are the things they find valuable. So it's quite possible, but I wouldn't say it's a lay down in Mazaire.
You think about it like this sort of the continuity feature where you've got your Mac, which is your big screen, then you've got your iPhone, which is your small screen, but then you'll have maybe your watch, which is your smaller, more portable device, and you just in the car, instead of having a phone in the car, it just talks to the Bluetooth system in the car, and that's your cellular modem, and you use it through a CarPlay or an Android Play system.
Well, the Android Wear has already got the OK Google features. Yeah. Yeah. So whether it goes through via Bluetooth or via a separate SIMs kind of
doesn't matter.
It's not really relevant. It just depends on whether you're ever likely to use it independently of the phone or not. Mm.
The thing I find exciting about wearables is, as you were saying, just the new and strange use cases that you find when you get one of these devices. Like I found when I was driving and I had my phone put away and I wanted to change a song on Pandora, I could just hit a button on my wrist, and I never would have thought of that. Or say if you've got your phone docked in a stereo or something, and you've got people over and you need to stop the music or go next song or whatever, you can just be in the kitchen and, you know, press the, like stuff like that. Yeah. I never thought of. It's just really exciting.
What about getting your footy scores on your wrist?
Exactly.
I mean, that is, you're not into footy, but for those of us into footy, it's like revolutionary to be able to go out for dinner, sit at a dinner table with friends instead of checking the app constantly. You've just got it sitting on your wrist and you glance at the score and it vibrates when there's a goal and you're like...
It's really exciting. Yeah, when Doug and I were testing that, we're at the pub together and another situation we didn't think about was it vibrates at the same time.
Yeah.
So then you'll be there talking and then and you're like, yay! And like, not huge fans of football either of us, but it was still, well, I'm more than him. I go for St Kilda, so I have reasons. But it was still, it just made it more exciting. It was really cool. But designing for the Pebble as well was like really, really fun experience. Just because there's so much, such restriction, you really have to pair down the experience just to the bare essentials. And there's something really nice and pure about that.
Mm.
Actually, another use case I really like is the navigation one. So I find often I'm walking around a foreign city and I've got a bag or something. My hands are not free and trying to do it off your phone's quite hard. Whereas there's an app on Pebble where it'll give you the turn by turn. It's really great for walking.
Really?
Yeah.
I have seen that. I haven't tried it, but
it's called NavMe.
Okay.
But I think your point about we don't know what these things are good for yet is just spot on. You know, if we've talked about, the mobile wallet, you know, everyone thinks about that as being on the phone. But if it's a Bluetooth LE or an NFC, there's no reason those chips can't get built into a watch. And, you know, you just swipe to pay. I just think it's
definitely a brave new world. Like if... just to have something there all the time, to not have to take your phone out of your pocket, and to just have the information there when you need it. And it forces, like we found with the Pebble, it forces the designers to just boil it down to the what you need now, and that's why Google has pushed this, you know, with the Android Wear. They're really going for the it's the now cards. Is that what they're called?
Yeah. I always love when there are these kind of new product categories that are coming. Yeah. You know, before the iPhone came, it's like, oh, what if, you know, no one's going to use those. No one needs those. What do you need to, you know, what do you need anything in your pocket for? And I'm starting to see the same sort of media coming about these wearables. Like, oh, who needs a wearable? What are you going to do? Yeah. No one's going to disrupt the, you know, the $3 billion watch market. And then someone, that guy again, Ben Evans, is like, well, who uses pocket watches anymore? You know, pocket watches was massive.
Yeah.
And you just walk, you know, you're in the airports and you go to the duty-free stores and there are watches everywhere and people spending millions and millions of dollars on watches. And my dad's an interesting one because he likes watches. You know, he's got some nice watches. But I guarantee you, if Apple came out with a watch, he would wear it. No question.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing about just consumer behavior as well, because if you look at watches, it's always sort of been a high-end luxury item. And we have these camps now where you're an iOS guy, you're an Android guy. I really think in the future, people will have maybe 3-4 smartwatches that are interchangeable. So it'll be interesting to see how they sort of like react. They're going to have to be sort of like cross-platform to a degree. I mean, that's what I like about Pebble is it works on everything.
But they won't be cross-platform.
Yeah. Like,
the LG watch works with Android.
With Android only. But
there's a rumor Microsoft will produce a cross-platform.
I did read that.
Yeah.
I read that.
But you're right. The Android wears with Android, and Apple will come out with an Apple-based watch. But there probably will be cross-platform devices like the Pebble.
Mm. Do you think Pebble will survive?
I think they will, because, you know, the interesting thing to me is, if you remember how skeptical I was about Pebble, but in fact now they've got a pretty good ecosystem of apps, and, you know, because they've been in the market for a year, they've got a lead and a build up and customer base and things. And it's a watch is not a thing you change often. I mean, I usually change them because I lose them. So I think that they will, you know, continue to gather momentum. But having said that, Android Wear looks pretty cool.
I think Pebble is going to be the low-cost option. I think you get a Pebble down to $50 and it becomes like a no-brainer. It's just something that people have, and it's like the Swatch or a Casio. Whereas I think the iWatch, if it ever comes out, will be like your high-end tag sort of.
How much do you think an iWatch will be?
Around $499.
No, I would have said
almost the same.
I would have said $299 iPod style pricing.
I'm guessing Pete's closer.
Okay,
that's original iPod pricing.
Yeah. Original. Yeah. Okay, yeah, $4. No, there's more than that.
Yeah, actually, yeah, it's about it.
I will get a watch when it looks like a watch and isn't a massive thing on my wrist. Because unlike you guys, I have a very small wrist.
That's not. I mean, that's not
true.
That,
it will be that. On my wrist.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. And the critical mass, is that what I'm looking for? The tipping point is going to be when it just looks like a regular watch. Like, it's not a tech gadget. Mm. Because I like the Pebble because it looks geeky. Mm. But most people just want a beautiful round watch or, you know, beautiful piece of hardware.
Have you seen the Moto 360? That looks
I haven't seen it. You see, I'm uncompelled. But then I've never regarded a watch as a fashion item. Mm. And the thing I like about the Pebble is that you can still read the time on it without having to do anything.
Yeah.
That to me is the fundamental number one use case. Without that, I'm not interested.
Mm.
That's a big thing. I remember when someone was demoing the Moto 360 and they're recording the watch face, but every 5 seconds they have to tap it, and I was just like, that looks like the most infuriating experience of all time. But I love that the Pebble lasts for days, and you can view it in bright sunlight.
5 days I got out of my last charge.
Yeah, so it's pretty good.
Do you worry about having Bluetooth devices strapped to your body 24/7? I've asked you this before.
In for a penny, in for a pound, Danny. I think we're too far gone.
Look, the amount of it's well below the established limits for EME.
So keep Bluetooth on.
I have no concerns about that.
Actually, that's an interesting point. So now that everything essentially needs internet and everything needs Bluetooth,
including
Android,
me,
I switch my my data on and off and my Bluetooth on and off to save battery and everything. Do you think that's going to become obsolete? Like, it's just going to, everyone's just going to keep it on, so they're going to turn those controls off.
It's not worth switching Bluetooth off, to be honest. It drains so little of your battery. And I keep it on because one of my use cases, I get in the car and my phone just hooks up and starts carrying on with the last podcast I was listening to. So,
all right. Well, it's always interesting having you on. I appreciate you coming in.
I hope we do more.
We will.
See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you.